I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, an issue I'm very passionate about. Activist judges in our state are flagrantly violating rules designed to keep courts open to the public and the press. We'll discuss. Plus, William Kirk of Washington Gun Law takes us through all the firearm-related bills on the table this legislative session, the good, the bad, and the very, very, very bad. Plus, Mark Zuckerberg says he's getting rid of Facebook fact-checkers in favor of a community notes system similar to what's happening with X. We'll discuss that and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. There is a serious attack happening on the free press in Washington state. And the only way, I do mean this, the only way to do anything about it is to be okay with going to jail, is to be okay with being arrested and to spend time in jail as members of the media. Now, it is something that would have to be done in unison by the press. Members of an institution that I do not have a lot of faith in right now will have to be willing to stick up for themselves, to stand together, and be okay with the prospect of being held in contempt of court by a judge and being sent to jail. I'm okay with it. I think that this issue we're going to discuss warrants it. I think it's worth it. And if we do not see a substantial change from the judiciary in Washington state, particularly in King County, then I know that I will. I don't know if any of my colleagues in the media will be willing to do it, but I am willing to stand in front of a judge and force that judge to arrest me, to have me arrested and sent to jail for the crime of wanting to make sure that the public knows what's happening inside those courtrooms. Let me explain. So this has been an issue for me. I have two real pet peeves as a member of the media that came to be pet peeves really when I was covering crime and justice. This goes back to the very beginning of my career in Seattle 15 or so years ago. I was in a courtroom or in a jail or a prison or all three in one day. I mean, almost every day, covering first appearances, covering bail hearings, covering trials. That's what I did day in and day out. At the time, it was incredibly rare as a member of the media to have a judge limit your access to a court of law and to the proceedings in a court of law. You would have that happen occasionally where they'd say, you know, the media isn't allowed to film, or the media is not allowed to record, or the media is not allowed to show the face of a suspect. It would happen rarely. It might happen if somebody had just been arrested and maybe there was a legitimate case to be made that it could be mistaken identity. You know, the person hadn't been charged yet. It was a bail hearing and the judge could be reasonably convinced that, hey, they're not even sure if this is their guy or their girl. And so we're not going to blast their face all over TV until they're charged. But it would happen very, very rarely. Well, over the years, it has become more frequent for judges to take liberties in preventing the media from having open access to a court of law. It has become one of my significant pet peeves, and I think now it's risen to the level where I think it's an attack on the free press. The other pet peeve I have in this realm, which you all know, is when people we pay with our money, taxpayer money, to be spokespeople for public agencies thwart us, don't respond to our request for comment, don't put out information to the public, so we're paying them to basically keep secrets from us. So these have become two real pet peeves that I think have become incredibly serious that every member of the media should be concerned about, and every member of the public should be concerned about, because it, when we're limited, when we're blocked, when we're ignored by quote-unquote public servants, it prevents us from being able to get information to the public. In the cases of these judges who have taken it upon themselves to protect criminals by limiting the access of a free press in the courtroom, it also puts the public in jeopardy, because when you have people who have been accused of violent crimes and a judge tells us, for no real reason, you're not allowed to film their face and to put it on the evening news. Well, when that person inevitably bails out and they're out roaming the streets, it hurts the public's ability to protect themselves from that person. So you have issues here related to a free press, a constitutional right. You have issues here related to the public's right to know what's happening in courtrooms, in cases that very much impact public safety. And I would also note that there are rules for Washington's court system that govern all of this and have for years. There are rules that specifically lay out the access the media is to have to a court of law. And these are rules that today are being flagrantly violated by judges. And thus is the problem, because what do you do when a judge is flagrantly violating rules and thwarting a free press? So there have been a couple high-profile examples of this. I'm going to get to a third that just happened, but I want to remind you of some times that we have ranted about this very issue on the show. There was a case, you'll recall, this is back in October, where a murder suspect, 19-year-old Kashawn Jimerson, had been released by an activist judge on $50,000 bail after stabbing a handyman to death. This is from Katie Davis Court, who had blasted this judge out at the time. And this was just about the low bail, something we have become very accustomed to. You had on video, and admitted to it when arrested, Kashawn Jimerson took a big old butcher knife. First, he attacked a handyman from behind with a pipe, then took a butcher knife and stabbed him to death. Prosecutors, he shows up in court. Prosecutors want $2 million bail. Judge Gelson in King County, Michelle Gelson, released him at $50,000 bail so he could go roam and reoffend and stab more people with butcher knives. Now, that was bad enough, and that was the initial part of the story. He's like, what are we doing? He killed someone with a butcher knife, and you're giving him $50,000 bail. That's insane. But then as our friend David Rose over at Fox 13 later pointed out, this Kashawn Jimerson had to be rearrested for some new violations. Goes back in front of yet another activist judge, and that judge grants a motion that the media cannot show his face on TV.
This is video from the crime scene showing 20-year-old Kashawn Jimerson hitting 65-year-old Michael Gray from behind with a broom handle. The video shows Gray then following him back into the apartment. And that's when detectives say Jimerson pulled out a butcher knife and stabbed Gray in the back, killing him. According to court documents, Jimerson called 911 after the crime and confessed. Judge Michelle Gelson, who you saw there, set his bail at $50,000. And 27 hours after he was taken into custody, he was released without electronic home monitoring. The Renton police chief demanded answers, asking why Judge Gelson granted such a low bail. During Jimerson's court appearance in front of Superior Court Judge Johanna Bender, Jimerson's mom wanted to address the court, asking that the media not show his face in fear of what she called vigilante justice. That's when Judge Bender expressed empathy for Jimerson's family.
Yeah, Judge Bender expressed empathy for the family of the killer, who was worried, oh, if you put his face on TV, there's going to be retribution. And that judge granted it for no legitimate reason, no legitimate reason whatsoever. You have someone who's on video committing the killing, who confessed to police to committing the killing, murdering an older gentleman with a butcher knife. And you have judges who, just because someone asks them, in this case, the mother of the suspect, says you cannot show his face. You cannot be in the courtroom, and you have to film him from the neck down, which is not in the interest of an open courtroom, a free press, or in the interest of the public, who deserves to know what the guy who stabbed someone with a butcher knife looks like. One of the other real egregious examples, and to me, this one was most baffling. I said at the time, I'd never experienced anything like it in 15 years doing this job. You may recall the case of Wendy Traynor. Wendy Traynor was murdered in cold blood, shot in the back of the head, execution style, by her estranged boyfriend, Josh Ellis, who'd traveled across the country to shoot her and kill her and just leave her dead on the floor of her new apartment. Well, Josh Ellis's case had been going through the court system, and we were covering it pretty extensively because prosecutors had offered Josh Ellis a sweetheart plea deal. You probably are starting to remember this case now. So we went down for a court appearance where Josh Ellis was going to change his plea to guilty because he got this sweetheart deal. So we're sitting in the courtroom as he's getting ready to enter a plea of guilty. Yes, I committed this crime. Yes, I murdered my ex-girlfriend. And his public defender asked the judge that we not be allowed to film his face at a court hearing where he's about to plead guilty to killing Wendy Traynor. And the judge just decided, yeah, that's reasonable. He's about to plead guilty to murder. But no, don't show his face. His picture had been out there on the news already for years. There was no reason to limit the media's access in that moment. And this is going to get a little wonky, but this is so important. And again, I think the only course of action here is to show up in court and be willing to go to jail. So there is something you learn as a young reporter, at least we used to, when you cover crime and justice, where you have an opportunity. If there is a motion on the floor from a defense attorney, usually to say, we don't want the media to be able to videotape our client's face. Okay. You know, it wasn't unusual for defense teams to ask that. Of course, they're just going to throw it out there like, oh, we don't want our client doesn't want his face on TV. Of course not. No criminal wants their face on TV. But judges would just say, you know, there's a presumption of open access and you have no real good justification for that. So they deny it. Now, occasionally, when a motion happened like that, a judge would grant a media representative in the courtroom an opportunity to make their case as to why they should have unfettered access to the courtroom. And we were taught to use General Rule 16. So as I said, there are rules that govern Washington courts and how things need to be handled in a courtroom, access, and all of those things. I'm going to read for you General Rule 16. Again, this is the judges, the courts are supposed to be bound by this. These are the rules everyone plays by. Courtroom photography and recording by the news media. Video and audio recording and still photography by the news media is allowed in the courtroom during and between sessions, provided that permission shall have first been expressly granted by the judge, and that media personnel not by their appearance or conduct distract participants in the proceedings or otherwise adversely affect the dignity and fairness of the proceedings. And that's okay. Like, yeah, you can film, you can take photographs, you can do audio and video recordings, just don't be in there acting a fool and disrupting things. So it was never an issue. You would always let the judge know and the bailiff know, hey, you know, we're going to be in the courtroom today, and it would never, ever be a problem. And then it says the judge shall exercise reasonable discretion in prescribing conditions and limitations with which media personnel shall comply. If the judge finds that sufficient reasons exist to warrant limitations on courtroom photography or recording, the judge shall make particularized findings on the record at the time of announcing the limitations. This may be done either orally or in a written order in determining what, if any, limitations should be imposed. The judge shall be guided by the following principles. Open access is presumed. Limitations on access must be supported by reasons found by the judge to be sufficiently compelling to outweigh that presumption. Any reasons found sufficient to support limitations on courtroom photography or recording shall relate to the specific circumstances of the case before the court rather than reflecting merely generalized views. Prior to imposing any limitations on courtroom photography or recording, the judge shall, upon request, hear from any party and from any other person or entity deemed appropriate by the judge. So that the key there, open access is presumed. Washington state courts are open to the public. That access is presumed because the public, through the media typically, has a right to know what's happening in court proceedings. So open access through the court's own rules is presumed unless a judge places limitations that are sufficiently compelling to outweigh that presumption and that are specific to the case at hand, not some general feeling that I don't want cameras in the courtroom today. Neither of those two cases that I just explained to you are even close when they made those decisions. No, you can't show the face of a murder suspect who confessed. No, you can't show the face of a guy who's about to enter a plea of guilty to killing his ex-girlfriend. In neither of those cases was there anything even remotely resembling sufficient reasons for a judge to deny open access to a court. And we have another one to add to that. This is stunning to me. And this is the thing that puts me over the edge to say, if something doesn't change, it's time for the media to go into these court hearings prepared to be arrested. Prepared to say, we will not abide by that order. We are going to show his face. We're going to photograph him. We're going to videotape him. Remember the guy who was just arrested before we left for the break for murdering in cold blood, a King County Metro bus driver, who, by the way, had another murder case from 6 years ago. His name is Richard Sislak. Well, he was in court yesterday, and King County Superior Court Judge Dave Keenan ruled, you guessed it, that the media could not show his face. Someone whose face had been all over the news. There was a manhunt for him. Everyone already knows what he looks like. There is no reason, no compelling reason that exists to, quote, warrant limitations on courtroom photography or recording. There is no compelling reason that would outweigh the presumption of open access for a free press constitutionally protected. You have a murder case where a two-time murder suspect whose face has already been blasted all over the news. You used the media to find him. You used the reach and the power of the media to get his face out there, to get the video out there of the surveillance video, to find him and bring him into custody. But now that you've done that, you say you can't show his face anymore. Can't videotape him in court. Never mind, he's a murder suspect. Can't videotape him. Can't show his face. No reason in the world that justifies it. It is a flagrant violation of Washington Court's General Rule 16. But it doesn't surprise me, coming from the judges that we've highlighted here and the judges we've highlighted in the past on the show. These are activists in robes, truly. You know, we've talked about some of them at length. This is the first I've heard of this particular judge, Dave Keenan. But one look at his social media, and it doesn't surprise me that he would run cover for a murderer. I mean, I saw a picture of him on social media with a pink gavel. Very demure, very mindful, he says. He's in pictures with Sal Mungia, the Democrats' choice for the newest state Supreme Court justice. You know, talking about Jay Inslee, Democrats, you know, pride events and all of these things, which is fine. But this is clearly someone, based on just a quick perusal of his social media, that is very ideologically driven. So of course he's going to run cover for a criminal, even a suspected murderer. Of course he's going to choose the side of a criminal, like these other judges have, over the rights of a free press and the rights of the public to be informed. Oh, and we also noticed that this particular judge posted a picture with the most notorious activist judge in the entire state, Judge Veronica Galvin. Judge Galvin and I presented for 2 hours on sentencing reform. Eventually, we'll do the podcast we keep talking about. Can't wait for that one. Judge Veronica Galvin, if we can just do a quick, you know, revisit of all the things that she's done. I mean, she's already out there doing podcasts. So if she does a podcast with him, that's fine. But Judge Veronica Galvin, the epitome of an activist judge. Here she is on a progressive podcast talking about her philosophy around juveniles and crime and how really we're all to blame.
None of the systems, none of us have clean hands within this context because these children are accessing these weapons from adults. They're not going into stores and buying them from adults who may not be responsible and have them locked up or have them safely to the side. I mean, we see grown people, get upset that somebody cut them off in a vehicle and start shooting. Grown people. And yet we have a higher standard and expectation for a 12-year-old. It's like putting a 2-year-old behind the wheel of a car and expecting that they're not going to hit anything. We have to take responsibility somewhat that we have created an environment in which these weapons are glorified. They are considered something of a thing to have to be cool or whatever. But this is on us as well. These children did not come into this world, with a machine gun in their hand.
Yeah, this isn't on us. That's the mindset, though. You have this judge notorious for letting violent offenders off the hook just because they're young black and brown men. sending them home, no bail, maybe electronic home monitoring, notorious. You can do the worst of the worst crimes, end up in front of Judge Veronica Galvin. And as long as the shade of your skin is right and your age is correct, then you get to go home slap on the wrist. And she wants to have these podcasts saying, oh, we all bear some responsibility. Does that mean you? I'm not taking responsibility for what these juveniles are doing. It's not my fault, but it sure as hell is your fault for not showing them that there are consequences on the back end of that, and they just can't go home with a little ankle monitor that they'll end up cutting off and running away. Just a few of the, this case came up recently, and I just have to revisit it since we're talking about these activist judges and the mindset that would have them have a murderer in front of them and tell a free press, you can't show their face on TV. You probably heard about this while we were gone. Gang-affiliated teen kidnaps 14-year-old, ties him to a tree, disembowels him 2 weeks after Judge Veronica Galvin released him from custody. Yeah, a horrifying case. You've got a teen. Judge Veronica Galvin had sent him home. I'll get to more on that in a minute, the case. He goes out less than 2 weeks later, ties a 14-year-old up to a tree and carves him out. This is from Cairo 7. Court documents, teen stabbed at Everett Park by rival gang over a girl. There's two teens who were suspected in this. The teens pistol whipped the boy before pinning him to the ground and stabbing him multiple times. Carved an N on his chest for Nortenios. The Tulalip teen reportedly told the boys, this is what you get for acting tough. The boy told detectives that the pair made him strip, then used his clothing to tie him to a tree and left him to die. He reportedly waited for them to leave and then untied himself and ran to the nearest home for help. Yeah, one of the teens that did that carved up a 14-year-old and tied him to a tree. 17-year-old Melores Canales. He shouldn't even have been on the streets. But it was because of Judge Veronica Galvin. He had been charged with first-degree assault, first-degree kidnapping, and robbery in this one. But before that, this is from Post Millennial, court records show that Canales was released from custody by King County Juvenile Court Judge Veronica Galvin on December 2nd, only 2 weeks before the Everett attack. He had been held on juvenile detention on felony charges for a robbery in Seattle that occurred on November 15th. Prosecutors asked for him to be held in custody awaiting trial, but Judge Galvin denied the state's request and released Canales to home monitoring. So here he was in juvie detention for a robbery in Seattle just on November 15th. And then Judge Galvin says, go on home for the holidays. On December 2nd, less than 2 weeks later, he's carving out a 14-year-old kid and hanging him by a tree to die. That's their mindset about the criminal justice system. Let's see, what else did she do? The kids who brought modified guns to the Chinatown International District Seafair Parade. Can you imagine if some white person, some white adult, was caught with, they were modified to be like fully auto, weren't they? Yeah. He's caught with it at a parade. They'd be calling it an act of terrorism. But some little gang members do it. And Judge Galvin releases them to electronic home monitoring. She also had released a 12-year-old who was accused of using a ghost gun in a Seattle carjacking. Yeah, 12 years old, going to use a ghost gun in a carjacking? Go on home. It's no big deal. God, I could go on and on. There's so many of these. The attacker who fractured the skull of a singer at El Corazon. Sprung from jail by none other than Judge Veronica Galvin. And that's the judge who's friends with Judge David Keenan, who just said the media can't show the face of the guy who murdered a King County Metro bus driver in cold blood. They're all ideologically captured. They all run in the same circles. They all are looking out for the interests of criminals ahead of the interests of the free press and the public. And they can get away with it because the free press as it is right now is almost non-existent and nobody fights back and nobody pushes back. Oh, and just to bring things full circle, can I just note, you know how there was two teens who were involved in the attack on the 14-year-old where they carved him up and hung him from a tree to die? And one of them, he should have been in jail, but he wasn't because Veronica Galvin sprung him loose. Well, then they both got arrested for the attack on the 14-year-old. Well, yeah, another judge got involved. The other teen, Hayden Lucenbrink, 17, who was involved in it. Oh, he's out now. He's out now, thanks to Judge John Scott of Snohomish County Superior Court. Gang-affiliated teen accused of kidnapping, stabbing, and disemboweling a 14-year-old boy in Washington State has been released on bail. Judge Scott set his bail at $300,000. The defendant posted bond and was released from custody on December 20th, jail records show, to carve up and hang another 14-year-old boy from a tree. The only way you get special treatment in Washington State is if you are a violent criminal. I believe it. There is no reason in the world why the media, why the public should be prohibited from seeing court proceedings, especially involving violent criminals who are often committing crimes at random against innocent bystanders. Why are the courts protecting them? Why are the courts trying to protect their identity? And all of this to say, and again, I go back to, it's in violation of their own court rules. Judges have some discretion, but the discretion has to be specific, it has to be just, and it has to outweigh the fact that there is a presumption of open access in the courts. And until the media comes together, even with the likes of us, and pushes back collectively, nothing's going to change. And it might take a few members of the media who are willing to go to jail at the order of a judge for refusing to comply with these bogus rulings. So if Judge David Keenan wants to hold us in contempt at the next court hearing, if we show up and we want to show the face of the guy who murdered a King County Metro bus driver, and Judge Keenan says, you can't do that, you can't videotape him, then I'm going to say, well, we're going to. We don't believe you have compelling reason under Rule 16, and we're not going to abide by that ruling. And he can hold us in contempt of court, and he can put me in a jail cell, and we'll see if any other members of the media are willing to stand up for themselves and thus stand up for the public. It really is a troubling trend that shows that the judiciary is completely out of control. All right, coming up next, we're going to highlight some of the half a dozen or so firearm-related bills that are being put forth this legislative session with none other than William Kirk of Washington Gun Law. He's the guy in all this stuff. First, it is a new year, so if you've got plans to try to maybe lose a little weight, get your energy back, get your stamina back in 2025, highly recommend reaching out to our friends at Eastside Weight Loss Clinic, eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. I have lost 40 pounds on the program, lost most of that in the first 2 months, and for me, that's really what sets it apart. Like, it's a difficult program for the first 60 days. If you're not ready to commit to it for 60 days, then don't even bother, honestly. But if you are and you're saying enough is enough, you know, I've had so many failed New Year's resolutions. The thing is that you can lose weight so quickly and shed excess fat that to me, that's one of the things that really kept me motivated. So schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team today at eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Okay, there are a ton of firearm-related bills on both sides of the aisle that are being introduced this legislative session. A few of them have been pre-filed. Some are fine. Some are just fine. Some are horrible trash garbage. And here's one of the things I just want to note before we go into this interview, because whenever we talk about firearm-related stuff, I always like to bring an expert in. I'm not the expert on that stuff. I believe we have Second Amendment rights. I don't want to see them infringed because I don't want to see my First Amendment rights infringed. And so these issues are important for that reason. But one of the other things I'd say is, you know, every governor has their pet projects, right? What was Governor Inslee? Climate. So there were a ton of climate-related bills, taxes pushed through in the 12 years of the Inslee administration. Think for a second what Bob Ferguson's pet project is. Bob Ferguson's pet project is guns. His office has been behind some of the most significant gun control laws that have been passed over the last decade. So when you have governors that have their pet projects, that's not going to stop for Bob Ferguson just because he's moving from the attorney general's office into the governor's office. You are going to see, similar to how Jay Inslee, you saw the climate bills tick up and all the rules and regulations, you're going to see the same thing under Governor Bob Ferguson. He will not veto a single gun control bill that comes to his desk. In fact, he's going to be working very hard behind the scenes to make sure that the ones he wants to pass, pass. And it will further restrict your Second Amendment rights. So to talk about these bills, the good, the bad, the ugly, we're joined by William Kirk with Washington Gun Law. William Kirk, welcome back to Undivided.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Brandy. Great to be back.
Well, yeah, you're the expert on these things. Rather than me yapping on about things, I'd rather have you do it because you know what you're talking about on guns. So first, let me just ask you about this tax that came up. It's not, you know, a formal proposal yet. It was in this like sort of leaked memo, 11% tax on the sale of guns and ammo. What say you, sir?
So, well, this is one of the many ways that they try to disarm citizens nationwide, especially states that are hell-bent on civilian disarmament, which is just to make the access to the Second Amendment cost prohibitive. The big problem for us here in Washington state is that both the city of Seattle and city of Tacoma have already done something similar, and the state Supreme Court has already given blessings to that. So if this is going to be challenged, it's going to have to be challenged in the federal court system, and we're gonna, not going to have any success at the state level.
Yeah, yeah, that seems to be for a lot of things, not just gun control issues. The state
but I think Brandy, one of the things your viewers need to be aware of is any bill that has the word tax on it is likely to be passed this year. I mean, the Democrats have thrown their playbook right out on the table, so we all know that.
Yeah, inadvertently, but we're glad that Senator Noelle Frame did the equivalent of the worst reply all email
ever.
Yeah,
reply all, exactly. Yeah.
So you've been tracking, obviously, any bills related to firearms. So take us through, just let's click through good and the bad.
Yeah, okay, well, let's start with the bad because that's what we're most accustomed to talking to around here. The first one is House Bill 1132, sponsored by Representatives Ormsby and Farivar. This is a second run at this, and this is essentially a quota on a constitutional right. So this would be akin of you being allowed to go to church, but only every other Sunday, or you being able to allow to speak freely, but only on even numbered days of the month or whatever. This would prohibit a person from purchasing any more than one firearm in a 30-day period. It would also prohibit how many rounds of ammunition you can acquire in any one transaction. Interestingly, and I have a video coming out on this, this law was passed about a year ago in California. It has never been enforced. The Ninth Circuit has enjoined it. That particular law is dying on the vine in California. And one would think that the Washington State Legislature, realizing we're in the Ninth Circuit as well, would probably take note of that. It's going to be very interesting to see if this bill passes, because some on our side always say they don't care at all about the Constitution. And if this bill is shoved through, I think that that's going to be a really good example of that argument. So that's 1132. Okay, House Bill 1152. This is a new safe storage law. This would radically and forever change how you could carry firearms in your automobile. And worse than that, it radically and forever changes how you can store firearms in your home. Washington's current safe storage law, which I actually think is a pretty decent law, specifically states that nothing in the law requires you how to store a firearm. What the law says is if you're an idiot about how you store it and then bad things happen because of it, you're on the hook for some of that. And I think safe storage laws should really be based on individual needs. For example, if you're living alone in a condo by yourself in a rough part of town, your safe storage provision may be much different than if you're living in a big home with four kids and the grandkids are running around all the time too. So that's what I really liked about Washington's current safe storage law. This one would mandate that if the firearm at your home is not on your person, it has to be locked away in a safe no matter what, irregardless of your living conditions. And the thing that I really dislike about this bill is that I get calls at least once or twice a week where someone has misplaced the firearm, left it, dudes leave it laying in the locker room, in the bathroom stalls way too often. And the law always said that the minute you realize your firearm is missing, if you contact local law enforcement and report that immediately, you have absolved yourself in any criminal liability. But this bill will actually remove that exception. And so what it is that a person's going to have the Hobson's choice of, do I call and get my firearm into the system so they can trace it? But in doing so, they're going to come out and charge me with a crime. So I don't know what I'm going to be advising people if this becomes law. To do in that situation.
There's also like, what am I going to do if I have an intruder? Am I going to take time to like get my firearm out of the safe or whatever it is? And by then I'm dead. So
That's right. It
doesn't make a lot of sense. And we don't have kids in the house. So,
all right.
Another bad bill I just want to touch on really quick because it came up last session. They're trying to make things more expensive for these firearm dealers. And to me, it's like they're trying to just make it impossible to actually own a firearm shop and to sell them. So they're trying to increase that. What's the bill?
Yeah, so last year they passed House Bill 2118, which had it passed in its original form, would have probably required FFLs to spend somewhere in excess of $250,000 to retrofit their buildings. Now, fortunately, that bill was watered down by some hard work by some Republicans down there. But without that bill even going into effect, because it does not go into effect until July of this year, along comes Senate Bill 5099, which is the Kill the FFL Bill 2.0. And this is just going to add on additional costs, not only in retrofitting the buildings, but also additional mandatory training requirements for all employees, new licensing requirements. And then it's going to authorize the Washington State Patrol essentially to act as a state ATF and be able to come in and inspect anything they want, anytime they want to do it. So that's Senate Bill 5099. Don't see how it's going to save any lives, but it's certainly going to help drive more FFLs out of businesses in the state, which is the purpose of that legislation.
Yeah, it seems so. Any other bad one? We're going to get to a couple good ones. Any other really bad ones?
We do. Yeah, here's the most offensive one. Have a video coming. We're recording this on, the 7th of January, so I don't know when we'll be going
live on
this.
It's going to air today, Bill. Now you just ruined it.
Fantastic.
People
would
thought this was live, and now we duped them. No, it's fine. Let's go. Good. Go.
That's awesome. House Bill 1163 is the first Liz Berry bill to drop. Now, they tried this last year. It was called House Bill 2021. No, excuse me, House Bill 1143. This would have started as a pre-purchasing licensing requirement. It eventually got watered down to a pre-purchasing educational requirement. This is akin to if you want to go to church, you have to get a permission slip from government before you do so. If you want to be, free from unreasonable searches and seizures, you actually have to go through a clearance before you're qualified for that. That's essentially what this does, because a pre-purchasing license is a way that the state can actually prohibit you from ever having access to firearms. And even though the state will clearly argue that the Second Amendment only protects the right to keep and bear arms, and they will literally make the argument that therefore we can regulate just about anything as it relates to acquiring firearms, there's a litany of case law out there that says all the ancillary rights necessary to exercise the core right are equally protected. It is as offensive as one could possibly imagine. It's House Bill 1163, and it will require live fire training. Okay. Now, here's the thing I want your viewers to really be aware of, Brandy. Let's take a situation where, and this happens, you have a woman who's just going through a terrible breakup. Her now ex-boyfriend is a nut job. Okay. And he's violent and he's threatening her. And yeah, she can go to court and get an order, but that's just a piece of paper. And we read in the paper, in the papers all the time, in the news all the time, how that doesn't work. So now she decides she wants to go out and defend herself. Well, she's going to have to go out and get fingerprinted first from her local police agency. God only knows how long that takes. Then once she's got her fingerprints, she'll then be able to apply for the license, which the state has up to 30 days to grant. So now we're 30 plus days into it already. Then she can walk into a gun store, clear her background check right away, except she's going to have to wait 10 more days before she can take receipt of the firearm. So we are at 40 plus days where this woman would only be protected by a piece of paper. So how Representative Berry could claim that this is about saving lives is beyond me. So that's, again, that is 1163. And then her companion over in the Senate, Marco Elias, has filed a companion bill in the Senate. So that's coming under Senate Bill 5140.
Now, forgive me if this sounds naive, but I think if I have a question about it, other people will too. You know, you still have to, like when you talk about a permit to have a firearm or a license, I mean, yeah, I had to get a concealed pistol license. You have that background check process where you're going through a formal process to be able to purchase a gun. So what takes it, because that to me seems almost like we already have to have, you always already have to jump through these hoops to be able to buy a firearm. So what's the difference between that and what makes this step so much more egregious?
There isn't. What this bill does is it requires you to go through a background check before you can go through a background check.
Okay.
And the background check that you're going to go through in both instances is exactly the same. And let's say you have a person who decides, wow, I'm going to go out and purchase my first firearm and I want to get a concealed pistol license. Okay. You're going to go through a background check to go through a background check to go through a background check to do that. And all three background checks will be identical.
So it's adding time. It's adding time. It's adding hoops.
Yeah. And cost.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about a couple good ones, shall we? I've got time for two. One that
Yeah, let's do it. Okay. I can do all three real quick. House Bill 1118 is a bill that has bipartisan support, would really streamline people who have lost their Second Amendment rights into getting restored. I think everyone should watch that carefully because it's bipartisan. House Bill 1139 is a bill I want everyone to pay attention to. This would take those who commit crimes using stolen firearms or are possessing stolen firearms or have a history of dealing in stolen firearms and exponentially increase the seriousness level of those offenses. And that's important because we know that almost 9 out of 10 gun crimes in the United States are committed by individuals who are unlawfully possessing the firearm at the time the crime is committed. So this actually addresses the identifiable problem. And then the bill I really like, Keith Wagner, Senate Bill 5056. Not like our background check system in Washington State would ever go down, right?
Never.
But since we know it does and it can be hacked, this bill basically says, hey, if the background check system is down for 7 or more days, then the Washington State Patrol and all the FFLs can go back and use the NICS, the FBI NICS background check system as an alternative until the state of Washington system gets back online. And interestingly, when the Washington State Patrol does a background check, guess what they run? They run a NICS background check anyway. So those are three good bills. And I just want your viewers to know that there are people down there in Olympia that are really fighting like crazy, trying to not only preserve, but expand your Second Amendment rights. They're just grotesquely outnumbered in Olympia right now.
Yeah. William Kirk, it sounds like you got a really busy session ahead of you. And it sounds like for you, that permit bill is the one where if I had to tell people one bill to watch out for, is that it?
Well, to me, it's the most offensive.
Yeah.
Because can you imagine having to get government's permission? Can you imagine having to get a hall pass to go exercise any other constitutional right?
Yeah, I don't think the government would give me a hall pass to do my podcast.
Well, the last time, Brandy, we had this type of competency evaluations before you can exercise a right, we called those, what? Poll taxes.
Yep, yep. Somebody brought up poll taxes yesterday. Second time in 2 days people have talked about poll taxes, comparing it to things that are happening right now. So, all right, William Kirk, if people want to follow all your in-depth on all of these things, where can they do it?
Well, best place to follow me is on YouTube, Washington Gun Law. You can also follow us on Twitter at GunWashington.
Love it. Love it. Love your time. Love your expertise. You're the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate William Kirk. He's the guy in all this, so we'll probably harass him a little bit more during the legislative session as some of these bills advance. So a lot of firearm-related bills, if 2A is your thing, or if the Constitution is your thing, which it's my thing. That's how I do this show. So we would like to keep it intact. All right. If you're thinking about selling your home in 2025, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. You know, the real estate market has been a little slow, but in our state, home prices are still pretty good. Your home might just need a little extra TLC to make sure you get the most bang for your buck.
You know, I'm hearing a lot of things. People are like, oh gosh, well, you know, there might be a recession coming up. I'm like, hey guys, anybody working in real estate has been living it for like the last 30 months or so. It's a strange conundrum though, because sales are low, but prices are still very, very high. You can still sell and you can plan on making a lot of money, but you might have to prepare your home a little bit harder and do a little bit more work than you have in the past, because buyers are a little bit, you know, less forgiving.
Yeah, they're particular. They want things to look nice when they go see it. So you might have those things that you've been living there, but you didn't want to do yourself. But now you're selling it, so you've got some cosmetic upgrades that you could do to get more money out of your home. And Wes loves those kinds of projects. So he's the son of a builder. And the nice thing is they can take on those projects for you. He can manage the contractors and all of that, so you don't have to worry about the stress of it. And he can even help you pay for it up front, which I think is a pretty cool service. It's their Listing Boost Concierge service. So why don't you just start by going to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Has it happened? I think Mark Zuckerberg has been red-pilled. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Speaking of Unbelievable, Nicole, has anyone commented on the new edition?
Oh, no.
Wow, I'm shocked.
I don't think so. Not that I've noticed.
I'm not going to say anything. I thought you guys noticed everything, but never mind. We'll continue. All right. So I think there are some positive changes in store for Facebook. I hope. I've told you guys my backstory with Facebook. So Facebook, by number of followers, is our largest platform. I think we have maybe 187,000 followers on Facebook. But it is not the platform where we get the most views, where we get the most traction, where we have the most reach. And that is because starting 2020, around 2021, Facebook started dramatically limiting the reach of political content, but I really think more so conservative political content. You know, we were very critical of the handling of the pandemic, and really, even my last 6 months in mainstream news, I was... In 2020 to 2021, my Facebook reach was about 3.5 million impressions every 28 days, which isn't bad. Overnight, and I do mean overnight, it dropped from 3.5 million roughly to 300,000 impressions every 28 days. insane, an insane change. And for us, we make our livelihood based off our reach. That's how we sell marketing and advertising. So it was a significant change. But in the last couple months, we've seen Mark Zuckerberg actually show some humility and give a little mea culpa for the extent to which they were thwarting certain types of political content on the social media platform. And now he's come out with what he says, and what I think would be a significant change. Mark Zuckerberg saying they are going to do away with Facebook fact checkers.
We've reached a point where it's just too many mistakes and too much censorship. The recent elections also feel like a cultural tipping point towards once again prioritizing speech. So we're going to get back to our roots and focus on reducing mistakes, simplifying our policies, and restoring free expression on our platforms. More specifically, here's what we're going to do. First, we're going to get rid of fact checkers and replace them with community notes, similar to X, starting in the US. After Trump first got elected in 2016, the legacy media wrote nonstop about how misinformation was a threat to democracy. We tried in good faith to address those concerns without becoming the arbiters of truth. But the fact checkers have just been too politically biased and have destroyed more trust than they've created, especially in the US. So over the next couple of months, we're going to phase in a more comprehensive community notes system.
I mean, that is a level of introspection that you don't see from people as powerful as Mark Zuckerberg. I mean, to say, and look, I don't know what the motivation is. Maybe he's seeing the writing on the wall. He's jealous of the attention that Elon Musk is getting and how well X is doing and how poorly Facebook is doing. I don't know. Could be business minded, just following, you know, like jumping on the bandwagon. I don't care. But to be able to sit there and say that, hey, we got it wrong a lot. We made a lot of mistakes. What we did in 2020, 2021, we might have thought we were doing the right thing, but we weren't. And our fact checkers are, in his words, too politically biased. And I mean, you see it every day. I'm sure you guys too on Facebook. And fewer people, I think, are using Facebook. But again, it's still our largest platform by number of followers. You see, so for instance, I have my personal page and then I have my fan page, my official page. So when I'm on that page and I'm, you know, I get the same sort of, what do you call feed, right? Where it's got stuff. There are a ton of pages I follow from my page that are in line with my interests, you know, news sites and organizations that I prefer, that I like, news personalities or talking heads like myself who I follow, who I prefer. I almost never in the last few years see their content in my feed. Instead, I'm fed all this garbage content I have no interest in, absolute clickbait, nonsense, and not the stuff that I have told Facebook I prefer. And I have to believe it's because it leans conservative, it skews conservative. And I will say, in just the last few weeks, so a couple weeks ago behind the scenes, I think I have a screen grab of it somewhere, I should find it. I got a notification from Facebook, my official page did. And it basically said, similar to what Mark Zuckerberg said, hey, here's what we tried to do in 2020, and here's where we went wrong, and we're going to kind of move away from that, from throttling certain types of content. And so I was like, wow, this is a nice admission. You know, it wasn't just sent to my page. I think it's probably sent to a lot of different pages. But I have seen slowly the reach, the impressions, the views start to tick back up. And so when they're not artificially throttled, I'll be curious to see where they go back to, because it's been several years now since the throttling started. So I'm not going to give up on Facebook quite yet. I'm hoping that a lot of things improve on Facebook. And Mark Zuckerberg has clearly taken a page out of Elon Musk. Now, our community notes, by the way, in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X, if you're a subscriber, take a moment to take that poll, because we'll talk about it coming up in a few minutes. Community notes aren't great either. I mean, if you use X, community notes basically allows people who are approved community noters to go in and rank things and offer community notes. But some people abuse it, you know, and some people add notes that are just stupid. Sometimes it's really good. You know, it's fact checking things. Then you can vote it up or vote it down. And a certain number of people have to say it's helpful before it even appears on X. But the issue when you get into fact checking is, who's the fact checker? Who's the fact checker? I don't want the government to be the fact checker. And clearly Facebook is saying that its own fact checkers were too politically biased. So I don't love the idea of, like, X has become a little bit loosey-goosey with facts. I mean, there's a lot of posts that seem to be making it into my feed that are misleading intentionally, so they're clickbait, right? Or rage farming. And it'll be like, that, you know, using a video of something Trump said 7 years ago and saying it happened today. And so you'll have to, you know, rely on community notes and people using X to go in and correct it, but it still lives there. And I know that's not ideal, but isn't that better than the alternative? Isn't it better than artificially suppressing speech and leaving room for politically biased fact checkers to say that this can't, this isn't going to be shown to anyone because we don't believe it to be true? So I think Facebook is going to become a little bit of the wild, wild west in terms of, you know, political information and what's true and what's not. But I, for one, prefer that. I am capable, as I know you are capable as well, of looking at information and checking a few sources to make sure that it's true before you just blindly share it. So it's going to take a little more thinking before clicking and sharing, but I think this will be great, and it'll be great for our business. I am so sick of, it's so crazy, because on X, like day one when we started streaming the show live on X, I think we had a few thousand viewers for day one. Like, we'll be lucky on Facebook, where we have an audience almost twice the size, to have like 100 live viewing the show.
Mm-hmm.
So it's clearly being throttled, right? Because that makes no sense at all.
And I actually think your opinion that Facebook is being less and less used is because of all of these things.
Right.
But I actually think people are still there. It's just that they have weird algorithms. Like, for instance, I don't post anything for a month. Then I post 2 days in a row. The first day you get tons of hits and or tons of likes. And then the second day it'll be like 15, 20. I'll have like 100 and something the first day. And that, but because they're what is that?
Algorithm.
Throttling the content, as if, you know, you create more so less people see it. So that's what worries me about people like us. Like, we create a lot of content. So how are they going to throttle that?
They shouldn't be throttling it. You should be, if I have liked a page, mm-hmm. I want to see what that page
exactly.
is doing. And so to throttle that page's content, like Ben Shapiro, I've liked Ben Shapiro's page. I almost never see a post from Ben Shapiro. And then I'll mm-hmm. go to his page and he'll have a ton of new posts.
Right.
But they're not fed to me. And you know what's the weirdest crap is fed to me. So I'll have
it's
like...
It's the stuff you pause on. And then all of a sudden that's in your
feed. But not even that. I've been getting... I took a screen recording on my phone the other day because I've been getting like pictures of chicks with big old boobies and in bathing suits.
It's probably because of your East Side...
I don't know, but like, I've been getting pics of like softcore porn in my Facebook algorithm,
mm-hmm.
and like, I'm sorry, I'm not watching softcore porn of chicks in bathing suits. Like, why is
Who's
that coming
to me?
And Mike? No, he doesn't use my computer. But then also just like dumb stuff, like, oh, hacks around your home, and mm-hmm. it'll be dumb like clickbaity stuff. And I'm like, why am I getting force fed that?
But not the stuff
mm-hmm. I click on, like the Free Press or, you know, mm-hmm. outlets that I like. It's infuriating. And from a mm-hmm. business standpoint, like, if we were to, I realize I'm going on a rant, but this stuff, without our social media pages, we don't have a business.
Mm-hmm.
So like, we have to tread lightly on certain things. We talked about this before on YouTube. Like, if you go to Truth Tellers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our Truth Tellers series, the two episodes that had to do with gender identity issues
mm-hmm.
throttled on YouTube. And YouTube is obviously different than Meta. So the other ones, great. I mean, I think we had great reach on like the Anna Kasparian episode. Mm-hmm. But then the two episodes that had to do with gender identity, throttled way down, like a couple hundred views. So it's just infuriating because we're putting out 6 hours a week of original, like, fact-based content.
Mm-hmm.
And they throttle that, but then the absolute utter nonsense
garbage.
Clickbait is mm-hmm. like 70 million views. It's like, that's 70 million views from people who you force fed it to.
Yep.
So it's just wild. That's my rant for today.
Well,
but
that's
pretty
frustrating. I like that he's on this, but I do worry about what will make it out there now that shouldn't, probably. But I would rather have that, and then you have to be your own you know, editor. You have to know, research. Don't just go by what you see.
We're going to have to police, you know, our parents' Facebook shares again. Like, hey, Mom, that didn't happen, you know. They got rid of the fact checkers. But, you know, so you might have to police your elderly loved ones' shares and stuff and consumption.
Luck.
But this is better. It's better off. And, you know, we've got to find a happy medium somewhere. I don't believe in, like, free-for-alls necessarily. I don't think freedom of speech equals freedom of reach.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's, you know, blue-haired, nose ring, septum pierced person in Oregon on a computer deciding whether what I posted about the pandemic is true or false.
Because they're our friends now.
No, thank you. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Those are our friends. Nothing wrong with a little nose piercing. Totally cool. Love it. Anyway, yeah, so I'm hopeful. I think that's a really good change. Thank you, Mark. That's nice. I appreciate it. I don't mind when somebody admits that they're wrong. Has anybody noticed what I pointed out earlier? No. Somebody
had to have. Matt claims that he did yesterday. I missed it.
And he didn't
it.
Say anything.
I was a little distracted.
I got this new fixture of the studio. It's a spaceship. Because, you know, I'm nothing if not a true believer. So I thought you guys would like that. And it also matches the spaceship we use in our unbelievable segments. So I thought it was great. Anyway, if you're looking to save some money this year, take the First Mark Challenge. So many Undivided viewers and listeners have done the First Mark Challenge and are saving thousands of dollars a year on their insurance. Why would you not do it? It's free. It's a no-brainer. It could save you thousands of dollars a year. Unless you're just swimming in money, independently wealthy, you know, married to a Nigerian prince. I don't know how else to convince you to do this. So take the First Mark Challenge. You just set aside a little bit of time. You talk to them about your current insurance, your insurance needs. They go out, shop the market for you, and come back with suggestions. They might come back and say, nope, you're good to go. Your insurance is the best that you can get, and we can't beat that. And then, okay, then you just go back to your life and just keep on going. Or you could be like one of our many viewers. Let's see. Beth said, Brandy, I listen to the First Mark commercials every day. Well, last week I reached out to them. Our annual premiums are going down more than $4,000. I can't believe I waited so long. Guys, we're out here saving. Well, we're not, but we are. First Mark's out here saving people $4,000 a year. And you haven't taken the First Mark challenge yet? Tisk, tisk. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies, and you never pay them a dime. Well, we're selling you on something that you don't pay for. It's just great. All right, let's get to, I think we have time for one national story. You know, we know that there are some low standards here around what teachers teach in the classroom. Our test scores in Washington State are in the toilet. And I think it's because of the focus on things like politics and social issues and everything but the basics. Well, in New Jersey, maybe soon to be in Washington, we like to take the dumbest ideas from other states and adopt them as our own. So if Chris Reykdal is listening, here's an idea for you. Why don't we just do away with the requirement that teachers can read and write? I don't see it. And Matt, I don't see any need for teachers to be proficient in basic reading, writing, and math. It's not like they're going to have to teach that to the kids. They're just teaching them about political and social issues. So that's why would true. You not do away with the requirement that they can read and write? This is from Fox News. New Jersey ends basic reading and writing skills tests requirement for teachers. Teachers in New Jersey will no longer be required to pass a basic reading, writing, and math test to be eligible for public schools, according to a new law, Act 1669, which was signed into law by Governor Phil Murphy in June, a Democrat, aims to tackle teacher shortages in the state by removing what the New Jersey Education Association, oh, shocking, it's a union thing, a teachers union called a barrier to certification. You're telling me the teachers union thinks so low of its teachers that a barrier to them getting a teacher certification is to, if they have to take a math or have to take a test that quizzes them in basic math, reading and writing. So to fix your teacher shortage, you're going to have people so incompetent that they couldn't even take a basic test, but they're going to make students take tests on the subjects that
they couldn't pass a test on.
Couldn't take a pass a test on. That should work out great. Yeah, I see Washington State doing this. I didn't even know that it was the New Jersey Education Association. Washington Education Association, they're going to be doing this next year. We don't want...
I mean, it would be one thing if you're like, well, they can't make it this far unless they can read. But they're saying it's a barrier, as in they're failing.
Right. That it's a barrier to them getting certified because they're failing the test for basic reading, writing, and arithmetic. Now, I want to know how basic, because math is... You give me a math question... There's like a 20% chance I'm going to answer it correctly. But I'm also not trying to be a teacher. I'm a podcaster. I talk into a microphone as a job, and nothing that I talk about involves math. But it's like, how basic are we talking here? How basic is the reading level?
Yeah.
Because you should be able to read pretty damn good to be a teacher.
Sure hope so.
And you're saying it's a barrier to being able to be certified as a teacher. Like, there's a lot of ways you could help deal with a teacher shortage. Hiring people who aren't very smart isn't the best solution to that, I don't think. That's just insane. And then what? You're lowering those standards for teachers, so you don't think they're gonna have lower standards of students? I mean, we already have lower standards of students, obviously. But yeah, I mean, I guess if all you're doing is indoctrinating kids, you really don't need to be proficient in reading, writing, and arithmetic. You just have to be proficient in whatever politics you want to shove down their throat. Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to get to our Daily Show poll. Yeah, next on Mark Zuckerberg and his decision to do away with fact checkers. First, a lot is happening in the United States right now and also elsewhere. Talked about Justin Trudeau leaving his post as prime minister in Canada. So we're kind of curious how that's going to impact the economy here, if at all. I think we'll talk to Zach about that on Thursday. That would be a good topic to discuss with him when he's on the show. But Bulwark Capital and Zach Abraham, who's the chief investment officer over at Bulwark Capital, this is what they specialize in. They specialize in, and their analysts, actively changing and adjusting to risk scenarios. So depending on what's happening in politics in the United States, the results of the election, et cetera, they're going to look at that. How is it influencing the market and other factors? And they're going to actively adjust your retirement portfolio to make sure it's positioned for success and it's actively managed. Their number one focus is mitigating risk. That's their number one focus. You only get one retirement. And so you want to make sure that you have someone managing your money who is actively managing the risk. So here's what I recommend in 2025. Just like you get a second opinion for a major health issue, get a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. Do Bulwark's free Know Your Risk portfolio review. In it, they'll cover the impacts of the election, an outlook for 2025, and they'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. You only get one retirement. Get a second opinion. Schedule your free portfolio review. Why do I keep yelling that at people? Stop yelling, Brandy. You only get one retirement. Get a second opinion. Schedule your free portfolio review now at knowyourriskradio.com. Knowyourriskradio.com. Ad reads aren't a strength of mine. You've worked with a lot of hosts.
You nail them.
You do?
Yeah.
You've worked with a lot of hosts,
yes,
who do live ad reads.
Yes.
I'm okay?
Yes.
The tangents are fine?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what sells.
Oh, okay. Great. Oh, yeah. I'm going to keep my tangents up. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Nicole. That's nice. Okay. Our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X is about Mark Zuckerberg's decision to get rid of Facebook fact checkers and replace it with a community notes type system. Do you believe that is a good decision? Yes or no? Nicole, it seems like you're kind of on board with it.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think that it needed something, and maybe they can figure out a better way to do it. But for sure, having people fact check with their all the biases, no.
I don't even believe, I don't even trust AI to fact check, because who programmed, who fed what to AI? I'm actually surprised the poll is as lopsided as it is. I thought there would be some dissent on it, but no, virtually everyone who took the poll from our subscribers said, yes, it's a good thing. Rocky P, the only time we go on Facebook is to troll our friend that works for the teachers union. It's been an interesting few months. That's funny. I want a friend in the teachers union
first
I control.
Snort of the year.
A first snort of the year. That's fine. Ginny Carlson, only if all warnings are removed and every page is restored. I feel he's only going this route to avoid losing lawsuits. Well, maybe. Mouse Killer's Big Rooster says it's a little too late. Jack Hartstock, Zuck has been red-pilled for sure. I like it. Red-pilled matches red hair. Perfect. Here, I added that little part. I thought it was funny. Okay. Harold Burns. Community notes are one of the best and frequently most entertaining parts of X. Hopefully Facebook can reproduce that vibe. Yeah, sometimes the community notes are pretty hilarious. I will say, I'm approved to do community notes on X. Have I ever told you that? That's a lot of power. That kind of power goes to your head when you can try to add a community note to just about anything.
I like it.
I mean,
you
know,
use
people
that power.
I don't have the time for it.
And funny.
I just really don't have the time for it.
Okay.
But, I mean, you know, during the election, I should have done that on Bob's post more often. But if I saw, you better believe, if I saw a recommended community note on one of Bob's posts, I would go in there and say, very helpful. Very helpful. So it ended up being on it. Candegan over on X, who trusts Meta to create fair community notes like moderation? Zuck only did this after Trump won to avoid accountability for Facebook's free speech suppression and news distortion. Meta's woke workers will simply redefine community notes to mean woke notes. Yeah, and I think as with everything, time will tell. Words are one thing, action are another is another thing. How will it actually work in practice and in principle once it's out there? So we'll see. And I'll tell you guys, because if we start to see a significant change to our reach, and I'm not looking for artificial reach, we have enough followers, we don't need artificial reach. All I'm looking for is them to stop throttling it. If we go back to what we were in 2020, 2021, then that's fine. I mean, you know, in 2020, I think I got like 50,000 followers, additional followers in a year on Facebook. I'll be lucky if we get 1,000 a year on Facebook now. So it's clearly being throttled. I just want you to take your foot off the brake and let us just go free, okay? Let us go free. All right, let's see. We're going to get to comments next, and we have a really good sanity check that I just love. Speaking of our friends in Canada, first, Natchez RV Resort is having another phase of its grand opening. And this one is really great. So their grand opening, January 25th and 26th. This grand opening is going to feature the best properties on the entire resort. You can get a first pick of their incredible lots, 25 premium extra large RV lots with amazing unobstructed views. And talk about privacy. These lots in particular, nothing is going to be developed behind them. So you're going to have some privacy. They start in the low 70s. So don't miss out on your opportunity for this phase of the grand opening, January 25th and 26th. And there's a ton to do out there. I've been out there with Mike. It's awesome. Their new saltwater pool and spa are now open, or sauna are now open. So that's awesome. Hot tub, rather. Is a sauna different from a hot tub? Sauna is the room you go in and bake,
right? You can
have
a wet or dry sauna.
Yeah. It's a hot tub. That's the one that's hot with the bubbles.
Right. But people will call them spas.
Yes. A little spa tub, if you will. Mm-hmm. So that's now open. That's really cool. Imagine out there with a glass of wine, peace and quiet, sitting in the hot tub, getting some bubblies. And they've also got a ton to do just year round for the whole family out there. 300 days of sunshine, fishing, hunting, skiing, golf, wine tasting, and more just minutes away. They've got a pickleball court, tennis courts, playground, dog park, all of it. NatchezRVResort.com, NatchezRVResort.com. Reserve your showing for this phase of their grand opening, the 25th and 26th of January. NatchezRVResort.com. Okay, questions, comments. Krista, I don't understand the logic of saying you can't show their faces anymore. There's no logic, Krista. If you don't understand the logic of judges saying you can't show the faces of a murder suspect who's already been all over the news, that's because you're sane. You're sane. And you're living in a sane, sane state of mind. Congratulations. Nightwolf, this is why there will be no fixing our state through the legal system. Because you have 12 years of Inslee-appointed judges. And then those judges turn around and they get to run unopposed usually. So there's no one there challenging them because it's difficult to challenge a sitting judge. And so we're in a situation that will be difficult, if not impossible, to ever dig ourselves out of. The only thing we can do is try to fairly put these judges on blast and try to encourage them to make some different decisions that are actually in the interest of public safety. Let's see, SLK, the one, there should not be any personal opinion. Judges are supposed to uphold the law, no matter how they feel. I mean, there's always going to be some room for judges to, what is the word, discretion, to use their discretion on things. Because if you have, again, I think there might be some legitimate examples where, so for instance, the media has always accepted that if you have a juvenile courtroom and someone's not being tried as an adult, that we're probably not going to be able to show their face. And a lot of media entities have a policy that they won't show the faces of juvenile suspects, regardless of what a judge might say. So I think there's always room for discretion, as long as it's reasonable and as long as you can clearly articulate and justify why, in that specific case, showing the face of a criminal suspect isn't the right thing or in the interest of the public. Now, like, the other thing you have to consider is the media is so sparse and so depleted that they're not going to court for a lot of things. It has to be a really serious, noteworthy case for TV stations to send someone to the court. So just by the virtue of them being there and wanting to document a person's face, that tells you it's already a serious case. Because or else they're not going to be there. So there should be very, very few examples where the media is prohibited from recording, from videotaping, etc. All right, David Poland, we didn't used to have gangs. We had kids riding bikes and calling them names. Things will get worse if we do not address the parents. Yeah, I don't know what that's going to take. Holding parents accountable for their kids' crimes to some extent. Midnight, this judge should be charged as an accessory to these crimes for everyone she has released. Are you going to join us, Nicole, or are you just going to?
Sure.
Okay. I was like,
you just want Trump to join me.
Hello, Donald. Good to see you, sir. Let's see, hi, Nicole. Midnight, yeah. This judge should be charged as an accessory to these crimes for everyone she has released. That will never happen. But wouldn't that be nice?
Won't. But, I mean, I would like to hear them maybe, I mean, they're not going to apologize, but I have never heard from any of these judges that we call out, other than the one that used that moment in court to say, like, please don't
I'm getting threats.
Yeah, I'm getting threats, whatever, but I mean, there's no acknowledgement over this. There's no accountability. Yeah. There's no way to hold them accountable at this point. Yeah. I don't know what we do.
They're independently elected. I mean, they're appointed, appointed and then you, well, they have to run for re-election. Right. So then they get elected and oftentimes they're running unopposed. So it's not like politicians can tell them anything. And so it's a really difficult situation.
But to start paying attention.
They're used to operating in this area where their actions don't get a lot of attention, right? And so the more that we push it out there, but it has to be the media as a whole. It has to be, and I had meant to and intended to the last time this came up, and I need to write a letter to the Bar Association, to the King County Superior Court, but we need other media outlets to join us and for it to be a united front to say this is becoming more and more common. It's in violation of General Rule 16. And we want to remind you that as the media, the presumption is that the courtroom will be open. But unless the media stands together, unless we get the Times, King 5, Como, Cairo, all of them, and say we're going to join you in this effort, nothing's going to come of
it. I do feel like that there has been a little build on that. So, you know, the social media, I mean, there's definitely conservative hosts that are posting about it. I've seen it on Fox 13. I have seen it on Como. So,
yeah.
I mean, they are picking up on, like, this is not okay, but this is what the judge is saying. Normally, it would just be you don't show the face, but they're pointing out that the judge will not allow them to show the face.
Yeah, I saw that on Como, and then our friend David Rose, he's always been good at stuff like that. He's an outlier. Mm-hmm. There's definitely a couple good reporters who are willing to do that. You know who I just saw left Como?
I did too.
Paul Riviera.
And it was doesn't sound like he has a plan. So,
I don't know. Some people say that and they have a plan, but yeah, Paul was
pretty clear with, like, I'm not leaving by choice. That's kind of.
Oh, is that the vibe you got from that?
That's the vibe I got from his post. We should reach out to him.
Maybe he wants to do some stuff for us. I don't know.
There you go.
But he was one of the few who I think would call that out. And there's only a couple left. There's only a handful left that would actually use the platform to say the judge would not let us show their face. And that's not right.
Right.
You know, you don't have to be passive about it. There's no justification for it. And if you're not going to stand up for yourselves, and when we stand up for ourselves in the media, we're really standing up for you, because that lens is the lens through which you get to see what's happening in a court of law. So it's a slap in the face to the free press, but it's really a slap in the face to the public, which those who those judges are supposed to serve. All right. Christia 253, $4.99 super chat. This is to start Brandy's bail fund. Thank you. Because, you know, the murderers, they get like house arrest. But if I was put in jail for contempt of court, $1 million. Yep. No bail. Then they'd put me in Gen Pop and then I'd really be screwed. The artist formerly known as Papa Woody says $2 super chat. Problem is their pet project's adverse effects on crime. I'm assuming that means.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Ter Smith, interesting you get arrested for a second DUI or driving without interlock. You are held without bond. So moral of the story, don't drink and drive, but violent crime is A-okay. Yeah, if you're out there thinking, should I drink and drive today or stab someone to death with a butcher knife? You'll probably get out of jail quicker if you stab someone to death with a butcher knife. Although it will depend on the color of your skin and your age, so just keep that in mind.
But don't drink and drive either.
But don't do any of it, yeah. Street, Nicole, is that a Trump friend behind you? I see the spaceship, Brandy. Maybe hang it in the airspace. Looks like you're trying to keep it on the down low. Well, I didn't need it to be a prominent fixture in the studio. I just liked it with the blue lights below it. And you know, I love the aliens. It's landed. Yeah, it's landed. Which is going to happen soon. I'll have told you. I save all the alien talk for at least 45 minutes into the show when the true, tried and true viewers and listeners are here.
I think he posted that right before you mentioned it. So he just got that.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah, it was just a what was there? A vase was there before. All right. Matt said fake news. We had a snort yesterday. Oh, I didn't realize I snorted yesterday.
I like fake news.
Whatever. I'm fake news. Rust about for fun. I take a sip at each snort. Hydration is healthy. Yeah. If you just drink 8 ounces of water for every snort or swear word on the show, you'll hit your water goals for the day.
Yeah.
All right. Those have been our comments for the day. Good ones as usual. Am I missing a ad read or anything? Thanks, Nicole.
No, we're good.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. I just want to make sure. With that, then, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, so by now you know that Donald Trump has said, hey, Canada, come on in. Just be our 51st state. Justin Trudeau can be the governor of the 51st state. I mean,
get in line because Greenland wants to.
Greenland wants to come, be one of our states. But the liberals in Canada don't think that's funny. And they have a counter proposal for Donald Trump.
Hey, Donald, have we got a deal for you?
Oh.
You think we want to be the 51st state? Nah, but maybe California would like to be the 11th province. How about it? California, Oregon, Washington, You've got geography in common with us. And not only that, we've already got a carbon trading system between California and Quebec. We've got some strong alliances on our West Coast from British Columbia. There's been a lot of academic papers on the idea of Cascadia. So California, Governor Newsom, and Washington State, Jay Inslee, and newly elected Governor of Oregon, Tina Kotek, how about it? Want to put a referendum to your citizens? Because this is what you deal. Have we got a deal for you? This is what you get. Free health care. Universal free health care. No more one-year-olds who suddenly fall off the Medicaid list and their parents are in the news because they're trying to do a GoFundMe so they can get their daughter to a doctor. Universal free health care. And guess what? Those gun laws that your Congress is too afraid to pass because of the national gun lobby, we already got our strict gun laws.
Yeah, so here's the deal. You can't have Washington because we're still fighting for it, but you can't have Jay Inslee. Ah, that's a deal for everyone. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you, especially our subscribers. If you have not paid to subscribe to Undivided for access to our Sunday show or our daily polls, we would love to have you do that. It helps us continue this work we're doing. Lord knows we're going to have a busy legislative session, and it's just $5 a month, which I think is a great deal. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. See you tomorrow.